to fasten the buckles under the portly warrior's armpits and neck. The Jiberian stooped, picked up his sword, a regular blade the length of his arm, and gave it a quick inspection. He placed it against the wall while he strapped greaves to his legs. Once done, he stood and regarded Pignot.
"How do I look?"
Harm asked. "Like a fat piece of shite," Pignot remarked without humour. "This yours?" He held out a helm. It was bronze, conical, with a thick visor that protected the eyes and nose, but not the lower jaw.
"It is,"
Harm said. "Give it here, then. I'm getting the wave from the media. It's time." They both looked in the arena organizer's direction. They also saw a brute of a man already conversing with him. He wore a shabby vest of studded leather and carried only a sword and square shield. A pot helm covered his head. Despite his ragged appearance, the man was as tall as Harm.
"Strong-looking," Pignot commented, "but looks like he's got his gear from his father."
"You're one to talk,"
Harm countered.
"Have you looked at what you dress yourself in?
Not listening to a dog who struts around with his gut hanging out.
That's strategy."
Harm patted his huge hairy belly, wholly unprotected. "They'll all be swinging for this while I'll be taking off their heads." He slapped a roll of fat, making it quiver. Pignot wasn't impressed.
"Let's hope you win this one and can at least buy a girdle."
Harm grunted.
"If I win, I'll be feasting this night."
"Dare say you'll perish, though," Pignot said.
"Dare say. Just don't be quick about it. People pay money to see a show."
"People pay nothing to see these games."
"That's right. My mistake."
Harm squared his shoulders.
"They can lick my ass, for all I care."
"That would be a show."
Half of Pignot's face hitched up in distaste. He held out the man's own square shield and fitted it to the Jiberian's left arm. Harm picked up his blade again, gave himself a quick look, and announced,
"Right. I'm ready.
Who do I have to kill?"
"Are all Jiberians like you?"
Pignot asked.
"No, just me."
Pignot shook his head and held out a fist. Holding his sword, Harm pressed his knuckles into his companion's.
"Care to wager?" Harm asked.
Pignot scoffed his answer to that and walked away. Harm watched him go, thinking that a simple wager wouldn't have hurt much. He realized he had very little to wager with, and Pignot was probably in the same situation. The potential for vast sums of coin had initially lured Harm to the games, but truth be known, the money was secondary. The Jiberian enjoyed fighting, fully expecting to die before the age of 40. If he lived to be old, he had no idea how he would support himself, and he screwed his nose up at the thought of becoming a merchant. Of course, if he actually won the games, or even strung together enough victories, then he could consider spending coin as a full-time profession. That and wenching. And drinking. Preferably both at the same time. Ignoring the scars and the other pit fighters, he made his way through the white tunnel to the arena. He stopped before the gatekeeper, just below the lowered portcullis. The old man sized up the Jiberian and shook his head.
"You're a ham waiting to be cut up, my son,"
the gatekeeper chuckled. Harm focused on the gate above and the sunlight streaming in.
"In your hole, you old tit."
The surprised gatekeeper blinked at the insult.
"Shall I pull that lever?"
Harm asked pointedly. Incensed, the old man yanked down hard on the bar, opening the portcullis. Harm jogged to his fate. He had more important things to do than exchanging barbs with old men. The light embraced him as he stepped onto the sands. The roar of the crowd washed over him, quickening his blood, but failing to move much else. These weren't his first games, and he'd been around long enough to know the crowd's true fickle nature. Some men loved the adoration of the masses, but Harm knew the truth of it. This day, however, he wondered how many had put coin on him winning, and how many pissers had wagered against. Those he meant to disappoint. Across the sands, the one called Muluk waited. He was indeed a tall man, perhaps even a finger or two higher than Harm. And meaty. Powerful-looking. Harm nodded at his adversary and received one in return. That pleased him. A simple greeting was a good sign.
He hated pit fighters who got so consumed in the moment that they forgot common courtesy. Overhead, the orator bellowed introductions. Upon hearing his name, Muluk raised his sword arm in salute. When Harm heard his name, he raised his arm as well. Some jeers reached his ears, and a rancid smile spread across his face. Some still remembered the Jiberian flinging a spear into the audience. It wasn't him, but he could understand his countrymen's reasons for doing so. There were days the crowd was with you, and then days they wanted your head. The orator shouted to begin. Muluk crossed the sand, his arms swinging at his sides. The leather he wore even more worn-looking the closer he got. His old pot helm had a few dents and completely hid the man's face. Harm cringed at the uncomfortable heat his opponent must be feeling. He took a deep breath and went to meet his foe halfway. "Hail, Harm of Jiberia," Muluk said loud enough to be heard over the crowd. "Hail," Harm yelled back. "Muluk of Cree. It is Cree, isn't it?" "Aye, that." At least he'd heard that part right. "Is this to the death, then?" "I've no stomach for it to be so," came Muluk's reply, his words somewhat metallic sounding. "In fact, the sight of blood turns my guts." That made Harm smile. "You shouldn't have signed up for this butchery, then." "You're right. I shouldn't have. So what did you, then?" "Coin." Muluk circled to his right, raising his weapon and shield. "Need the gold. Times are hard." "So you entered hell looking for it?" Harm shook his head. He circled right as well, sword and shield at the ready. "That's why you wear the rags." Muluk swung his sword at Harm's head. Harm parried with his shield and stabbed with his own blade, driving the other man back. The Jiberian nodded in approval at the nimble evasion. He took a new grip on his sword and slowly pursued. "These rags once belonged to my father," Muluk answered, seemingly not bothered by the sword exchange. "Truly?" "Aye, that." Harm grunted and threw a combination of strikes. Muluk blocked each one with his square shield, moving the barrier up and down, left and right, as needed. Then he thrust with his own blade, and Harm barely deflected the blade with his own protective barrier. "You're a strong one, Muluk," Harm cried and shook his arm. "I felt that last one, all the way up my shoulder." "Aye. You know slouch yourself. For a fat man," Muluk shot back, but Harm imagined a smile around the words. "I thought this to be an easy mark." The Jiberian laughed. "They all think that. I fooled you too, I see." Muluk skipped to his right, and Harm matched him. They narrowed the gap and erupted into a short, violent exchange of swords. Harm stabbed for his foe's leg, and then his head. Both blows were turned aside. They parted, and Harm noted that the Cree's shoulders and chest barely heaved at all. The man had stamina as well as strength. Thoughts of wearing him down exited Harm's head. "You don't move fast on your feet, but you're quick with the sword and shield," Muluk called over the crowd's growing insistence to liven things up. The man didn't rush things just to please them, however. And that also pleased Harm. He hated the kind who listened to the spectators. "Faster than shot through a sick cow, if need be," Harm answered. Muluk's helm arched back in a chuckle. Harm shook his own head. "This is quite the place for a conversation." Perhaps agreeing with him, Muluk charged, bringing his sword down in a ferocious chop. Harm caught it on his shield, then sent his own blade into Muluk's, who turned it away. They parted, and like two bulls contesting for a cow, they eyed each other. "It is that," Muluk replied. "You seem like a friendly sort," Harm said. "As do you, Jiberian. Then, if you're interested and don't feel too put out, I'll buy you a roast and drink after the day's fights. You do that." With unexpected speed, Harm stepped in and shield bashed his foe's face. Muluk blocked with his own shield, but he didn't expect or see Harm's sword pommel. With his opponent partially blinded, Harm twisted and drove that brutal piece of metal down, as if hammering nail, slamming it into the side of Muluk's pot helm with a frightening gong. The impact dazed the Cree long enough for Harm to shield punch him a second time. That connection knocked Muluk clean off his feet, and he crashed onto his back, arching his spine as if in great pain. Pressing forward, Harm hooked Mullock's sword and flicked it away, before planting a knee on the man's chest. With care, he inserted the tip of his sword under Mullock's helm and tapped its edge twice.
"The least I can do,"
Harm declared good-naturedly. Inside the Mullock's pot helm, the face dusty, a pair of dark eyes gleamed. When he didn't answer straight away, Harm feared he might have insulted the fallen Cree gladiator. But then the prone man carefully raised a hand in surrender. Cheers blasted overhead, mixed with more than a few boos. But Harm cared little for them. He just won his first match.
"Damnation,"
Mullock groaned.
"Never saw that coming. You took the wind out of me."
"My apologies," Harm said.
"It is a rough sport."
Mullock groaned again.
"I'll have my revenge, Siberian bastard. I can drink like a fish."
He tapped Harm's ankle, and the heavier man stepped back and allowed him to get to his feet.
"We'll see about that, then,"
Harm said.
"I was worried for a moment."
Mullock waved his hand.
"I'm just glad to be alive. And with only a few bruises. The pit's one way to get coin, but not one suited to me. No ill will, Harm of Siberia."
He held out his fist. Harm regarded it. Then, amongst the cheers and the insults of the crowd, he drove the tip of his sword into the arena sand. He pressed his own fist against Mullock's.
"Now ill will, Mullock of... where are you from again?"
Three men took their leave of the pit for the day, made their way to the public bathhouses and washed away the grime of the arena. Since Pignot had not yet fought, and Mullock had lost, Harm declared that the baths, food and drink would all be gifts this evening. He held his small leather purse, containing his winnings by the strings, quite content with the 20 gold coins filling it. Once washed and dressed in regular clothes, Harm led them to an alehouse he had discovered only 2 days ago, which served a wonderful pork roast. They ordered ale, along with enough food for 3 big men, and proceeded to get drunk well into the night. Smoke filled the alehouse, some wafting from the kitchen area, some from pipes, and all blending with the ripe smell of body odor. The 3 men sat in an alcove made of heavy wood, their 8th pitcher in the table's center. Mugs surrounded the container. Gristle and leftover shreds of unappealing fat lay on wooden plates. Harm belched loudly and wiped his mouth. He looked at Pignot, who had actually arm-wrestled a local mere moments earlier, and won 5 gold for his efforts. Pignot was a strong man. One needed only to look at his swelling arms to see it, but the lad who thought he could take him must have been even drunker. At least he handed over his wager with a smile. Harm disliked fighting in alehouses.
"You are,"
Pignot slurred and pointed at Mullock, sitting on the inside of the booth.
"Perhaps the first man from Cree I've met."
"I am,"
Mullock slurred right back.
"Dare say I'm the only Cree in these parts, though I may be mistaken." "You can hold your drink,"
Mullock exhaled dangerously in reply. Pignot was indeed correct. The Cree could hold his alcohol, which was good. Harm also hated watching over quick-tempered drunks.
"I think our paying companion here is the only Siberian in Sunja as well,"
Pignot said, turning his finger.
"I think so too,"
Harm agreed. "Not since the last one..." The 3 men smiled. They knew the story.
"So what will you do?" Pignot asked Mullock. "Now that you're out of the games, I mean."
The Cree thought about it.
"Don't really know. I was a trapper, but I got tired of the life. I could also chop trees, being something of a woodsman as well."
He shrugged.
"I'll find something." "Chop trees,"
Harm said.
"That explains our fight. You strike damn hard. It was a good thing I had a shield."
Mullock shrugged.
"I might stay a while, however. Sleep in the streets or somewhere until I can see this fight between you and the churchman."
"I'm interested in that one myself," Pignot added. "What was it you called him?"
Harm chuckled.
"A cog? No. Pig bastard? Not that."
Harm had to think about it.
"Heathen shagger? That was it."
Pignot smiled.
Wait.
Mullock frowned.
I was there, too.
He called him
a heathen shagger.
Who?
Phaedrian?
Aye, that. Mullock smiled. You're going to have to kill that one. You could feel the heat from him, he was so angry.
Old wood pressed against Harn's back as he shifted.
My thoughts on it are this. He baits men into fighting him. What's the word? Tempts. He tempts.
Will you kill him?
Pignot asked. Harm studied Pignot.
I don't know.
He'll kill you. Guaranteed.
Pignot's dark eyes glittered. Harm took a drink from his mug.
I'll have forgotten this, but tomorrow, if the lad wishes to back out, I'll let him.
Mullock looked at Pignot.
I didn't think one could back out of a blood match.
Aye, that, the sonjan said. You can't back out of a blood match, you heathen shagger.
I'll add that. I'm going to call you that whenever I can now. Shagger.
Heathen shagger.
Harm took another shot from his mug, thinking hard on his companion's words. You can't back out of a blood match.
Can't I?
Harm suppressed a burp. Red eyes studied him.
It's to the death,
Pignot said, and almost knocked over his mug as he reached for it. He took a long pull off the lip.
To the death,
he repeated, and chuckled. Frowning in drunken puzzlement, Harm drank with him. Leave it to Pignot to make a person feel better. In another part of the city of Sunja, in a dilapidated church that threatened to collapse at any moment, the man called Phaedrian knelt on a mat in front of 100 lit candles, the only source of light in the building. He had stripped, preferring to pray without clothing. Phaedrian clasped his large hands and looked to the heavens, visible through a huge gash torn in the roof high above. He prayed. He prayed as if his life depended on it. He prayed for victory, and he prayed that he remained strong during the games. He vowed to restore the church to its former glory with whatever gold he won. Prayers of vengeance came out of him then against the man known as Harm. To speak out against the son of Seddon and the Lord, who spoke to Phaedrian every day, was to speak out against the Holy One himself. While Phaedrian remained alive, he swore to send all non-believers and blasphemers to Seddon's heavenly court, where they would be judged. He'd made a blood sacrifice of the first man he met in Sunja's pit. He would make another of the man called Harm from the barbarous country known as Jiberia. Disgust filled Vadrian's face. That fat heathen originated from a feral land where men and women lived in incessant sin. One day, when the church was restored and Vadrian possessed an army of followers as devoted as himself, he would ride into that savage land and put the entire countryside to the sword and torch, all in Seddon's holy name. But first, there needed to be sacrifice. An evening sacrifice. Phaedrian had sacrificed much to be in Sunja's pit. He'd sacrificed his mother and his father, and his younger sister and brother. While he had wept as he crushed the lives from his family's earthly forms, he knew a better place awaited them. He saved them from the rampant evil in Seddon's world. There was evil all around. Evil so thick, it was only a matter of time before it infected his family. It was best to send those he loved to Seddon before any wickedness could touch them. Seddon, Phaedrian believed, would not be pleased just by saving a few meagre souls, however pure they might be.
Send them all, Seddon had commanded one night, and you shall be rewarded.
So Phaedrian sent them, every chance he could. To that end, he unclasped his hands and reached behind him. Phaedrian had spent an hour looking for vagrants, but there were none to be saved. He had hunted in the area before. Perhaps the wretched could somehow sense his divine approach. Such power was an evil ability to have, if they could, and bestowed only onto agents of Saemon. All the better to find them and take their lives. One old man, however, hadn't been so quick. Phaedrian pulled the dog into his hands. Blind eyes stared and frail bones trembled as Phaedrian slipped one hand around the old man's neck, then the other.
Terrified whimpers filled the church. Vadrian ignored those. Once he secured his grip, Vadrian squeezed. Hands poured at his forearms, but he increased the pressure, squeezing until his muscles knotted and his fingers ached. The whimpers ceased, but Vadrian kept on squeezing, and somewhere near his strength's end, he twisted. Chapter 5 Millik and Samarhead. On the morning of the second day, Dark Curge awoke in his bedchamber, entangled in blankets. He yawned, stretched, and eventually sat up. The covers fell from his broad, grizzled chest to tumble down onto his growing paunch. He brushed them away with his left half-arm and got out of bed. Naked and not caring in the least, he walked to the bedchamber's window and threw open the wooden shutters. Grey clouds bloated the sky and threatened rain. Dark Curge scowled. Rain would delay the games, and his man fought this day. He wanted to see what the prized prospect of his house could do. Curge especially wanted to gloat in the company of Nexus and Gastillo. Unknown to the wine merchant, he enjoyed watching Nexus boiled to a rave. He enjoyed seeing gold-faced Gastillo squirm. Then Curge remembered who his lad was fighting. A free-trained dog. Not particularly challenging. He sighed. Of the 10 houses, stables and schools present at the games, only 3 were considered major contenders. The House of Curge remained the most consistent in developing not just gladiators, but skilled destroyers of men. The other 7 were regarded as inferior, but capable of producing and fielding at least 1 or 2 talented pit fighters. Not champion quality, but notable, and Curge felt he was being gracious in admitting that. The free trained, however, with the absolute gurry of the games. Scroff. Troughshite. Unfit and sorely lacking. Yet every season, hundreds of self-proclaimed warriors, undertrained but bursting with visions of coin and glory, were drawn to Sunja's pit. Occasionally, however, some actually showed skill. Like the Vadrian lad. Curge went through his morning routine with a bored expression. His servants, all young, shapely women dressed in flimsy robes, bathed, dressed, and fed him. Once finished, he stepped outside onto green grass and walked the short distance to his training grounds and accompanying properties, all within a great walled compound that shielded him from the rest of the city. His deceased father had built the House of Curge in the richer part of Sunja, within a stone's toss of the nobility district. It was as close as Curge would ever come to noble, and while he openly scoffed the upper classes, and even Sunja's own royalty, he secretly coveted a more regal station in life. The damp grass covered a wild plot of land, right up to a low wall. Curge went through an open door, ignored a passageway and side corridors, and climbed steps to a second level. He made his way through a series of short halls, drawn to voices giving orders. As he got closer, he heard voices straining from exertion as well. Dark Curge stepped onto an open balcony and looked down into a courtyard. 29 pit fighters, hell pups of the highest ability, went through their morning exercises. Sweat gleamed over their well-formed bodies, and their exertions punctuated the air. Trainers walked amongst them, observing the men lift heavy-looking timbers time and time again. None of the gladiators were slaves. They were all free men, paying a modest fee and a portion of their winnings to train within the House of Curge, hoping that the taskmasters and trainers could fashion them into the next champion of the games. Curge's family history with the games was so great that being accepted by the House carried a huge amount of prestige. The trainers cracked whips when needed. After a moment, Curge caught the attention of his taskmaster, a squat, thick-necked man named Barris. He summoned the man to the balcony. "Well?" Curge asked, leaning against the balcony's railing. "All is ready," the taskmaster reported. "Tubrick has gone on to the pit with Samarhead." Curge pursed his lips and studied the badly scarred man. "He's still healthy?"
"He is, and in bloody spirits."
"Good.
He'll be a terror these games. Tubrick and Bashar
agree as well.
I have faith that he will, Kurge said. The House of Kurge had several gladiators poised to do very well during the season. It was Kurge's belief that Samarhead was his best. The pit fighter was a brute, swift on his feet and ready to kill. Some pit fighters hesitated to take another's life, but it was Kurge's uncontested opinion that a gladiator had to be willing to gut a man, sometimes in the bloodiest fashion possible, to rise above the rest, even if it meant inciting the wrath of other houses. If a pit fighter wasn't willing to slit another's throat, one had no business being in the sport. Kurge folded what he could of his arms and looked at those lifting timbers on the sands below. I have a good feeling about this season. Might be wise if you're placing wagers this year, Barris. I'd bet my entire fortune if I were able. A servant appeared and bowed, attracting Kurge's attention. He nodded to his taskmaster. I'm summoned. Whip those dogs in shape. Barris departed. Kurge motioned for his servant to lead the way. He followed the young woman down a set of steps to the main doors, watching her curves sway underneath her sheer wisps of cloth. Kurge cocked an eyebrow. The woman wasn't unattractive. He would have to summon her to his bedchamber later, after the day's events. She led him to a room just off of the main entrance where, with a wave of her hand, she presented his human weasel, Bazange, who gave a short bow. Kurge whisked the servant away.
Well, there's a problem,
Bazange began. Omar's never returned last night.
He didn't.
Kurge's bald scalp knotted up.
Where is he?
I don't know, my lord,
Bazange reported truthfully.
I instructed him to locate this Vadrian fellow, and that was the last I heard of him. I even went out prowling, well after hours, I might add, searching all of Omar's usual haunts. There was no sign of him.
That puzzled Kurge. Did you pay him?
No, my lord, I did not.
He's probably still looking, then.
Possibly.
It does sound strange, knowing that greedy little bastard. Fear not. Vadrian is giving his bloodhound's nose a challenge, is all.
I'm sure you're correct,
agreed Bazange, with a subtle bow.
I've also overheard some information regarding the House of Tylo. One of his guards has a loose tongue, especially when plied by a woman and drink. He says Tylo is placing a lot of faith in one called Red Mane.
Red Mane,
Kurge repeated, studying the smaller man.
Yes, my lord. Apparently the gladiator fights equally well with both hands.
Tylo greatly favours him.
Shall I make a wager?
He's supposed to be good, eh?
Kurge thought about it. When will he fight?
Undecided as of yet, my lord.
Keep watch on it, then.
See when he fights and who. Especially who. Place gold on him, but not so much to frighten off the birds.
Where did Tylo find him?
What's the man's background? Is he a farmer? Soldier? Mercenary?
I shall investigate, my lord.
Do that.
Kurge glowered, thoughts churning. Also, this afternoon, Samarhead fights some free-trained shite. Make the wager, make it heavy. He'll be heavily favoured after this day. Bazange bowed once more. All the bowing sometimes irritated Kurge. He wasn't sure the little pisser was mocking him or not.
Off with you, then, the owner commanded, and make us some coin.
Yet another bow, and Bazange saw himself out. Kurge watched him go. The little man was a sly one, wise enough to know where the power rested, and where it was dangerous to tread. He wasn't the first man Kurge had employed, but if he was smart, Bazange would live to be the last. Kurge remembered his last head of spies, and how the man had thought he could steal a little from every wager he placed on behalf of the house. It wasn't long before Kurge discovered the thievery and decided to make an example of him. The offender was caught, placed in a very private room, and tied down. Every now and again, when the mood took him, Kurge would go to that room with a very sharp hand axe. And Kurge had Bazange go with him, so the new agent would witness and remember the very horrifying proceedings. Kurge wanted Bazange to see and hear every chop of steel into flesh, every squeal of terror, and every word of pleading. As warning.
Wrong, dark Kurge, and he would find out.
After eating his noon meal, Kurge left with four of his private guards and made his way to Sunja's pit. A sizable crowd gathered about the arena gates, despite the overcast sky. It lifted Kurge's spirits. Spectators were gold to him. With his four watchful guards at his back, Kurge wandered the outer halls of the great arena. He eavesdropped on commoners, as well as watched some free-trained gladiators practice in one of the many training and sparring lots. He stayed behind the crowds, studying the men going through their paces, eventually dismissing them as no threat to any of his contenders and of no interest to acquire. Kurge liked to scout the free-trained by himself if possible. He trusted his own eye more than those of his spies. If the gurry contained a gold nugget, he would take the initiative and offer the man a place on his roster, as an investment for the current and later years. And the dogs usually joined, overjoyed at being recognized with potential. It didn't always happen, but Kurge thought wise to sift through the shite. One never knew. After having enough of watching and longing to drink something, Kurge decided to leave for the manager's box. The fights were already starting inside, and the arena exploded at times with the crowd's enthusiasm. On his way back, however, Kurge spied a familiar figure flanked by his own guards. Standing back from a practice lot, Nexus watched a pair of pit fighters exchange light strikes and parries. Kurge smiled. The silver-haired bastard was a wealthy merchant and vintner in Sunja, and obviously had a shrewd enough mind to search through the shite. The question was he a good judge of talent? He thought about just passing by the old topper when Nexus turned and saw him.
Kurge! The wine man frowned. What are you doing here?
Inspecting the goods. You think you are the only one eyeing the meat?
Apparently not, Nexus said,
and gazed upon the practicing fighters in the lot. A look of distaste deepened upon the old man's grooved face. It struck Kurge then that Nexus just might have believed that he was the only one of a mind to inspect potential goods. That amused him. If so, then Nexus was quite naive to the ways of the games.
Might I stand with you for a moment?
Kurge offered a cool half-smile.
Can't get enough of my company in the box. You have me there. Or perhaps you look to see if I have found anything of interest here at the market,
Nexus stated without looking at Kurge. The two fighters continued with their exercises.
Well, have you?
Kurge drew closer to the well-dressed wine merchant, imposing his much larger self. The guards of both individuals eyed each other, as well as their respective masters.
I wouldn't tell you if I did, you one-armed snake,
Nexus replied without fear.
You'd usurp my purchases at first chance.
Well, I might, Kurge admitted, but that's the nature of the games, good Nexus. If I were to learn something from your sharp eye, then I'd be a fool not to take advantage of it. Which was the truth. All the owners did the very thing, playing at games within games.
Save the honey for your sluts,
Nexus snipped dismissively. I may be inexperienced to the ways of the pit, but I can tell you this for free. I'm here now, and I learn fast.
Apologies, Nexus, Kurge said politely. I meant no offense.
Get your tongue out of my ass, Nexus muttered. I get enough of such shite from the merchants I deal with. I thought that you stable owners were of a purer, more direct lot, but I can see that I made a mistake.
I have a house,
Kurge corrected, in a tone that suggested Nexus remember that.
House, school, stable, Nexus growled. All packs of trained dogs. Call yourself what you like if it pleases you.
That silenced Kurge, and he regarded the wine man's profile, very tempted to slap it. Nexus's eyes didn't leave the pit fighters in the practice lots.
Fair enough, then, Kurge said,
taking that last insult but unwilling to take another.
I'll speak without honey from here on, when it's just us boys.
That earned a stern look from Nexus, actually breaking his gaze away from the display of arms.
What have we here, then, huh?
Dark Kurge indicated the two gladiators with his half-arm.
Not much.
He sniffed then, hard, clearing his sinuses.
Well-muscled, but with problems. That one there, the tall one, he has tells.
He leads with his eyes before he strikes. He'll be gutted by the first intelligent warrior fortunate enough to be paired with him. And his partner there? The one looking as if he eats nothing but meat? What do you see there?
Nexus bristled at the question, and his eyes narrowed. He's quick to be fooled by a feint.
Aye, that, Kurge agreed. And that tells us what? I'm no novice at this, you brazen ass-packer.
Indulge me, Nexus, Kurge pushed, dropping the honorific good,
wanting a sense of how much Nexus actually did know about this trade.
He's nervous.
And what else?
Nexus cocked an eyebrow.
He's new to the games?
Yes.
Exactly.
No need to powder the man's ass at all,
Kurge decided. Nexus was right on target with his observations.
Anything else?
The lines in Nexus's face deepened as he concentrated, but he did not add anything more.
No. That's it.
Not at all, Kurge disagreed.
Seddon's black hanging fruit. That's it, I said.
Of course not. He looks impressive, and all you've said about him is true. But there is one other tell which I'll keep as a secret. Give you something to think upon.
Nexus didn't move, but his face took on a familiar shade of anger. Kurge knew his point had sunk home. He inhaled sharply, catching a whiff of unwashed bodies. It was time to get to the box and do some drinking whilst men cut each other open.
You'll no doubt ask your taskmaster anyway, he said as an afterthought.
Who is your taskmaster, or trainers?
Nexus pursed his lips.
A man called Clavellus.
Clavellus?
The drunkard.
Kurge let slip a face of surprise. The name hooked unpleasant memories and once-forgotten promises.
You have him. I recalled him retired from the profession long ago. He has an estate somewhere on the road to Vathia, doesn't he?
Aye, that he does. Well, you're in good hands, then, Kurge said, mulling the name.
I'll leave you to it. The fights start shortly.
Kurge departed the wine merchant's company.
Clavellus,
he mused darkly. That was a name he'd have to investigate further, just to make sure. He suspected the wine man simply said the name to shock him. That alone soured his mood. With his guards parting the crowds, Kurge strode purposely through the outer arena. He spotted Bazenge, who gave him a nod.
Excellent, Kurge thought, his mood improving. Wagers are in place. Let the feast begin.
At the door to the viewing box, Kurge left his escort. A manservant opened the door, while a woman just beyond the threshold held out a silver cup. Kurge took the wine and moved to the front, where Gastillo sat, a similar cup in hand, his golden mask dull under a cloudy sky.
You're early, Kurge muttered, as he plopped down across from him. You're fashionably late,
Gastillo said, and sipped.
Met my friend Nexus outside,
Kurge threw out, knowing it would rankle the other men.
We were discussing wine. Taken up an interest, have you?
A slight interest, Kurge said. One shouldn't dwell on the games forever, you know.
But I suppose you do know.
Gastillo didn't bother replying. He looked across the arena and took another drink. With his free hand, he lifted his mask and dabbed at his mouth with an expensive-looking hand towel. Kurge noticed the cloth.
Is this what you spend your money on, good Gastillo?
Gastillo's profile dipped.
It was a gift from a silk merchant.
Silk? You really are branching out, aren't you? Silk tulles for that mess of a mouth today, and silk rags for your ass tomorrow.
Dark Kurge shook his head. Maybe these games aren't for you, Gastillo. I haven't seen you outside inspecting the free trained. Perhaps your mind isn't in it anymore.
Perhaps, Gastillo allowed. Kurge smiled broadly, tickled with the man's short reply. Kurge had no real enemies, and Gastillo and Nexus were hardly a match. One was trying to assimilate everything he could in the short time of the games, while the other was doing his utmost to survive. Gastillo had only a fraction of the arena experience Kurge possessed, and Nexus had no experience at all. They were both beneath him.
Kurge wondered how Nexus had ever gotten into this privileged box. He had probably paid someone to get in, hoping it was private. Kurge drank his wine. Bad luck indeed. The orator stepped onto the platform, holding his robes about him as if they were about to fall. He held up his hands.
"Good citizens of Asunja,"
he started in a low voice, quieting the onlookers.
"This dark afternoon is well suited for the first match of the day. This afternoon, under heavy clouds and moist air, the House of Kurge has delivered unto us a fiend, a thing of hell, an abomination forged of flesh, bone, blood, and steel, a child of war and a destructor of men, a creature from the lands of great ice, cut by the same freezing storms that sculpt mountains with their breath. He is a monster of a man. If you dare call him one, he is Samahead."
The crowd exploded into cheers. "I wrote that introduction myself," Dark Kurge confided to Gastillo, smiling at the rousing introduction. The golden mask remained stoic, but Kurge knew he struck a nerve. The portcullis rose with a cranky voice, and a tall figure dressed in heavy plate armor shambled onto the sands. One hand held a double-bladed battle-axe that most men used with two, while Samarhead's other hand held a massive shield that could have once been a door. A great helm, elaborate in design, had two great bull horns forward-mounted, while a red iron visor hid his face completely. The crowd lost their voices when they saw the warrior, but as Samarhead shambled onto the sand, they began to roar, low at first, then growing into a surge of approval. Samarhead moved as if the weight of his armor burdened him greatly, and it took some time for him to walk to where he wanted to be. He turned and carefully bowed in the direction of the king's platform, though the king was nowhere in sight. Then the beast sighted the box of the top ruling houses and schools and bowed to Dark Kurge. The owner dipped his head in return. His respect noted, Samarhead turned and waited for his opponent to appear. The man entering from the opposing side was not small either. The orator introduced him as Milok, from Sunja, and there was an uninspired sprinkling of cheers that quickly died away into nothing. The man wore a coat of ringmail that left his muscular arms unprotected. He carried a sword and offhand axe, swishing them as if clearing stubborn brush. His helm was a common pot helm of the variety found in the pit's armory. Free trained. An eager Kurge wondered if the maggot knew he'd been fed to a beast. With a flourish, the orator shouted for the match to begin. A brave Milok plodded across the arena sand, raising his weapons as he got closer to his larger foe. His fearless march drew jeers from the spectators. The Sunjan stopped midway, having done his part, and planted both feet. He gestured for the man from the lands of great ice to meet him halfway. Unmoving, Samarhead stayed where he was. Taunts and curses prompted the Sunjan beckon his opponent once more. But the menacing warrior from the lands of great ice showed no indication of having seen or heard. Frustrated, Milok trekked the rest of the way, and Kurge thought he could hear the man cursing as he marched along. When Milok came within three strides of Samarhead, he paused again, appreciating the sheer size of the northern brute for the first time. The crowd swore upon them, screaming for action. Milok sprang at the giant. His sword and hand axe stabbed and cut. He lashed out at a head and chopped at an arm, kicked at a knee and thrust for a gut. Samarhead moved his door-sized shield this way and that, effortlessly it seemed, blocking all of the attacks. The man from the lands of great ice then pushed forward with his shield, blinding his smaller foe for the instant it took to rear back his battle-axe and bring it down on top of the flat pot-helm, splitting the metal and the head within down the middle. The crowd exploded with cheers. Milok dropped to his knees as if before a king. His weapons fell while blood streamed down his front and back and pooled in the sand. Samarhead stood poised, axe still buried in a dead man's head, as if waiting for something.
The spectators eventually became quiet, wondering what manner of hellion Samarhead was. An uncertain silence hushed the arena, and some even wondered if, in death, Millik had managed to stab his foe through the belly before he died. Even the orator looked vexed, and cast a wondering eye in Dark Kurge's direction. Then, at a point of absolute silence, where not even a breath could be heard, Samarhead wrenched his axe free of the ruined skull, the blade squealing against the helm. Only then did the corpse fall over. After a short, considering moment, Samarhead raised his axe to the gloomy heavens. Once more the people gushed their praise, and even Kurge himself shook a victorious fist. The great Samarhead was indeed his prize in these games, and though the match was short-lived, the effect rippled through the entire arena. Samarhead had just become the gladiator to be feared, and Kurge adored it. "That's my lad," he smiled at a silent Gastillo. Though under his golden mask, the man's face twitched.
Chapter 6 Parched. Harm awoke with a powerful thirst. He slapped a hand to his forehead and dragged it down over his features, as if that might improve things. It did not. A pounding, as steady as an axe stroke, tormented the width of his skull. He yawned loudly, sat up and looked around the table. Things did not look better. In fact, they looked terrible. The alcove they'd occupied since last night was a sty. He had passed out in the back, face down on the table. There was a pair of feet at the other end, and a buzzing snore caught his attention. Mulluk. That was Mulluk. He was certain of it. The Cree had outdrunk them all. Empty pitchers filled the table, most standing, some upended, but the one that drew his attention was the one Pignot had thrown up in. Harm grimaced, baring his yellow and black teeth. Pignot had wagered with another Sunjan that he could drink what he had just voided, and he had done so for a handful of gold. He couldn't keep the mouthful down, however, and had spewed everything back in the same pitcher moments later, much to the delight of everyone at the table. Images came into the Jiberian's mind and left. Memories of food. Sliced apples and pears and peeled oranges, roasts and ale. At some point someone ordered Sunjan mead. That unfit concoction could make a man lose all ankle support, and that was when the alehouse had begun to spin. Some women had visited their table but, as usual, they had disappeared with the night. A shame, as there were some right nice ones, and Harm faintly recalled having one well-formed wench on his knee, remembering how she giggled when he tickled her. He shook his head, cringed at the receding, pounding within, and caught the whiff of something foul. He tried hard not to look at the pitcher Pignot had filled. A fruit tray on the table drew his attention, and the few slices of melon there, though he couldn't rightly remember any melon. Regardless, he took a slice and munched it down, savoring its water. The alehouse was quiet. Peaceful, the interior empty and full of gloom. Tossing the finished melon onto the table, Harm eased himself out of the alcove, his bare belly scrubbing the table's edge. Mulluk's feet twitched, but he continued snoring, a raspy, nasal sound that Harm had no comparison for. The Jiberian stood, instantly regretting it as the room began to whirl. He plopped back down on the bench and laid his head on the table. The cool surface felt wonderful, rooting him to the spot. He didn't want to leave.
"Keeper!" Harm grimaced at the parched squawk of his voice. "Keeper, bring me a pitcher."
He thought of Mulluk then, and Pignot.
"Three pitchers of water."
The effort took his strength, and he took several deep, settling breaths. Nothing else moved, so he leaned out, to see if there was anyone about. No one, except for a few dead-looking drunks splayed out on the floor. Harm believed they shared a drink together. His stomach lurched dangerously, settled, and was replaced by an urgent need to piss.
He stood and staggered to a door that led to a latrine. He made it safely, freed his manhood from the folds of his breeches, and relieved himself with a sigh. His forehead knotted up at the soreness down there, but he paid it no further mind. A hole in the roof let the sky in, and Harm could see only greyness between the planks. As he pissed, he heard noise inside the alehouse. He finished, tucked himself away, and drove his shoulder into the doorframe as he stumbled back inside. The barkeep walked back from his table.
"Good morning to you," he said with a nod.
He was a small, portly man wearing pants and a shirt with a clean-looking apron. The barkeep obviously had changed his clothes. Harm muttered a reply and nodded back. He made it to his table, placed both hands around a clay pitcher, and drank deeply. He stopped once to kick Mullock in the ribs. The man did not wake. Harm considered throwing some water on his face, but decided against it. He drank until only a quarter remained. Then he sat down, moving Pignot's offensive pitcher to the far end. The smell wafted, causing Harm to shiver and nearly almost retch. Holding his nose, he picked up the pitcher, intending to dump it in the latrine. Mullock, on his back and snoring like a babe, caught his hungover attention. Harm considered the full pitcher in his fist. Mullock's head was right below, his mouth open, ripe for the jest. Holding out his arm, Harm began to tip the contents.
"He'll hate ye for it," the barkeep rumbled from across the way.
The words cut through the fog of Harm's brain, and he ceased tipping. The barkeep was right. Funny it would have been, but cruel, and the lad would be stinking right up until he could get washed, which was a good question of where and when.
"You're a good man," Harm said,
as he unsteadily crossed the floor.
"Not really," the barkeep muttered. "Just didn't want to clean that up."
"Hmm," Harm said. "Apologies for thinking it." The barkeep nodded. Harm dumped the pitcher's contents into the latrine and held his breath. Once the container emptied, he gave it a deep shake and retreated back inside. He thumped the pitcher on the bar and returned to his table, where Mullock remained on his back, snoring comfortably. Harm kicked him again before he sat down.
"Do I owe you anything here?"
Harm croaked, his voice a rasp. Memories of singing touched him then, and a mule.
"Nothing," replied the barkeep. "You were more than generous last night."
Harm checked his purse. There was something left inside, and he untied the strings to look. Two gold coins peeked out at him, and that made him think. He'd won 20. The baths, food, drink, and women had taken all of his money. Thoughts lingered on the women. He'd paid a woman for something, he remembered faintly. Mullock yawned mightily. Harm gave him yet another kick to the ribs, harder this time.
"I felt the last one,"
the Cree moaned, his eyes still closed.
"But I thought I was dreaming."
"It's morning," Harm informed him. "Get up. We have things to do."
With an effort, Mullock pulled himself up and sat down across from Harm. He yawned again while scratching at his crotch. Harm pushed the tray with the food scraps towards him. Muttering thanks, Mullock chewed on a piece of apple. The Jiberian nudged a pitcher over, which was also gratefully accepted.
"Surprised I'm still alive after last night," Mullock said,
but Harm was deep into a morning stare and didn't rouse from it.
"Where's Pignot?"
the Cree asked. Harm grunted, still staring off at nothing.
"Pignot?
Don't know.
Probably with that wench you paid for."
Harm looked at him.
"I paid for a wench. You lost the wager."
"I did."
"Aye, that you did."
Mullock nodded and drank again.
"I don't remember anything."
The Cree almost choked on his water, startling the other men. When he composed himself, Mullock asked,
"You don't remember the mule?"
Harm shook his head. A broad grin broke across Mullock's face.
"What's about the mule?"
Harm asked, growing uneasy.
"Morning, lads,"
Pignot called out from the second floor.
The men looked up and saw their companion standing amongst the ceiling timbers, his hands on a second-floor railing.
"Anything to eat or drink? There's water," Mullock said.
Pignot joined them. He was missing his shirt and sat bare-chested at the table. He picked at the scraps and gratefully accepted the pitcher. When he finished, he looked at both men and smiled.
"That was a time last night."
"Did I pay for a woman for you?"
Harm asked. "You did. You lost a wager."
"What wager?"
Pignot exchanged amused looks with Mullock, and both men chuckled.
"You don't want to know," Pignot informed him.
"Not even I will bring it up again. Least, not in your presence, anyway."
"And I'm sure the others were too drunk to notice,"
Mullock added. Harm fumed and rubbed his coins together. There were more important things to think about this morning and wagers to place. Not that it would be much, and he said that to his companions.
"Fear not," Pignot said. "I have a gold piece left. I'll throw it down on the table for the lot of us."
"I cannot offer anything," Mullock said, "unless I sell my sword. No one will take the rags I have as armor."
"That might be an idea," Pignot said.
"The sword, I mean. You won't be needing it now, since you've been yanked from the games. Wager on us, and you'll get your coin back and more."
"Or you'll be in an even worse state,"
Harm added. The idea brightened Mullock.
"Why not, then?"
"One thing first this morning," Pignot said. "I think a gold piece will get a better breakfast than this. And a bath."
Both Harm and Mullock declined the food, so the three of them went to the public bathhouse. They paid a gold coin and were given more fruit and water while soaking in hot water. A deep soak was just the thing needed after a night of drinking. They finished bathing and, still feeling unable to eat anything beyond soft fruit, they decided to head to the arena and watch the games from the stands. None of them were scheduled to fight, but they would check with the media to see when they were scheduled. Harm, in particular, wanted to know when his blood match would happen. The loud, preaching voice of Vadrian greeted them upon entering the general quarters.
"Lords above," breathed Mullock.
"I supposed he didn't see me around," Harm muttered, "and no one said a word to him."
The Zhiberian glanced around the huge chamber, cluttered with men going about their business. A familiar figure caught his eye. Vadrian was speaking with two men sitting on a bench.
"He has a following," Pignot observed.
"So it seems,"
Harm wondered.
"He's been talking shite,"
a nearby pit fighter said, catching the three's attention. Shadow covered half of the man's upper torso, and the rest was in hard shape. Bandages sheathed him, and he talked through a badly swollen mouth. He balanced himself on a pair of crutches. As the three companions watched, the stricken pit fighter sat down heavily on a bench, baring his teeth as he did so.
"Been listening, have you?" Pignot asked. "You certainly can't do much else."
The wounded man shrugged.
"I know you,"
Mullock said, pointing.
"You're Gal?"
That summoned a grimace.
"Gol."
"Gol, then? You killed Baylus the Butcher?"
Gol grunted.
"Not before he danced on me."
Harm eyed Gol's foot.
"Broke your foot?"
"Broke my toes."
Gol smiled, his wrecked lips warping his expression. He might have been an ordinary-looking man otherwise, possessing dark eyes, short sandy hair. Dressed as he was, it was easy to see how badly the butcher had mauled him.
"Also my shoulder and some of my jaw, I think."
"Seeing when you fight next, then, are you?"
Mullock asked.
"My games are finished,"
Gol sighed, his dark eyes glittering.
"If I can recover quickly enough, I'll make for Cree before winter."
"You're from Cree?"
Mullock asked, and released a stream of foreign syllables that brought a smile to the battered man's face. Gol replied in his country's tongue, and both men shared a chuckle. Shaking his head, Harn turned away and watched Vadrian raise his arms to the ceiling. Armor covered the man, and he abruptly turned and strode toward the arena tunnels, sword and spiked gauntlets swishing at his sides. Without thinking, Harm walked in Vadrian's wake,
until he stopped before the scars, standing guard in front of the media's desk.
"Oh, media," Harm greeted. "I see that Punts is fighting this day. Who is the unfortunate soul?"
The arena official looked up from his documents and sized up the belly and bare chest before him, his expression souring the farther his eyes rose. "He wanted to fight you, Harm of Jiberia, as his scheduled foe could not fight. We hailed you this morning, but as the start time drew near, we found another to fight him." Harm closed his eyes.
"He was going to fight me this morning."
"He was, but as I said, you were not here." The media regarded the man. "Fortunate for you. You look unfit."
"When will I fight that bastard?"
The media thought about it.
"If he's victorious and not too badly cut up, perhaps the day after tomorrow, depending on whether you win your match, of course, if you wish it."
"Who will it be?" "A man called Summerhead," the media informed him, "from the House of Kurge. Formidable, I might add, killed his last foe."
"I know about the House of Kurge," Harm said. "Dark Kurge only takes killers under his wing. He has one now, I dare say. So I fight tomorrow. To the death, I imagine."
The media said nothing.
"Till tomorrow, then."
Harm nodded and turned to go. He walked back to his companions. Pignot saw him and gestured at his brooding face.
"Something wrong?"
"No,"
Harm said, and looked to Goal.
"Were you to fight Vadrian this day?"
"I was."
"But you couldn't?"
Goal scowled and didn't answer that.
"What I meant was, they were looking for you to fight Vadrian,"
Mullock asked.
"Aye that,"
Harm said. Mullock winced and looked towards a wall.
"He'll think you're dodging him now."
Pignot placed his hands on his hips,
regardless of what you say.
Harm didn't answer right away.
"Until I meet him on the sands?"
"When will that happen?" Pignot asked.
"After my next fight."
"Your next fight?"
"Aye that. One of Dark Kurge's hell pups. One called Summerhead."
Gol's eyes widened.
"You've drawn Summerhead."
The three men looked at the crippled gladiator.
"You know of him?" Harm asked.
"He split the head open of some poor topper only just now in the pit. Only moments before you arrived."
The three men strained to hear over the bustling activity around them.
"Split the head?"
Mullock asked. Goal nodded.
"With a battle axe. One-handed. I saw the fight. I forget the man's name, but he came out strong. But Summerhead was right evil-looking. He waited for the bastard to get closer, which he did. He also carried a huge shield and stayed behind it until he saw his moment.
One cut, right through the pot helm, opened his brain pan to the neck, and stood there with the dead man until all got quiet. Then he pulled the axe free."
"Dark Kurge trains his boys to finish fights,"
Harm said.
"Kurge trains his lads to kill."
Pignot's lip curled.
"No secret there."
"Aye that." "What are you going to do then?"
Mullock asked. Harm and Pignot exchanged looks.
"What was Summerhead wearing, Goal?"
the Siberian asked.
"Heavy armor. Plate."
"Well, then, that settles one thing,"
Harm said. "I'll take the biggest axe I can swing from the armory. Looks like I'll be doing some woodcutting of my own, friend Mullock."
"Trees don't split skulls,"
Mullock replied.
"They do if they fall on you,"
Pignot remarked.
"Many thanks to you, Goal. You've done the Jiberian a great favour. He's in your debt, I wager."
"Least I can do."
Goal's features became dark with some unknown emotion. From above, a huge cheer went up like a crashing of a monstrous wave. Other pit fighters paused and looked to the ceiling, fearful that it might fall in.
"I think,"
Pignot began, "we just lost the opportunity to make some coin."
"Maybe,"
Harm said, his eyes still on Goal.
"But we'll have coin tomorrow. If you have anything left in your purse, friend Goal, you wager it on whom you wish. But if you are wise, you'll place it on my head."
That lifted Goal's spirit somewhat.
"That's so. Can you guarantee it?"
"Of course I can't. But if I die,
"'It'll matter not to me,' Harm said. "'But if I win, if I drive this Samar head to his knees right and proper?' Pignot couldn't contain himself. He grabbed and shook Moloch by the shoulder. "'Best sell that sword of yours for whatever you can get. I can smell the odds now. We fast this day, boys, but we'll eat like kings tomorrow.' "'Even you, young Gol,' Harm added. That pleased Gold to a point, but something bothered the man. Harm didn't press him, however, since, having only just met, such prying would be considered rude, even by free-trained standards. "'To the facts, then,' Pignot said. "'Come with us if you wish, friend Gol.' The battered Cree considered it, and just as Harm believed the man would decline, he surprised them all by accepting. Gol stood without any help. Harm liked that. The four of them exited the general quarters only moments before the self-proclaimed Son of Sedan returned, victorious for the second time. Chapter 7 Sedan's Son Vadrian did not linger after his victory. He collected his money, cleaned his weapons, sent his two followers away to spread the word of his success, and finally left the general quarters for his church. He walked in public bearing his armor and weapons, and the crowds parted for him with expressions of fear. Vadrian didn't pay them any mind as he remembered his second fight, pleased at how quickly he'd dispatched his foe. The man was free-trained, as was Vadrian, but he wasn't infused with the light and strength of Sedan, and thus he was doomed from the start. The spectators had sensed it also, and those that had wagered coin on his victory were not disappointed. It was beginning, and Vadrian knew that in time he'd gather to him a flock of both warriors and commoners. Once that happened, Sedan above would show him the way. Vadrian suspected it would be fraught with war, and on a scale that would dwarf the one on Sunja's borders. And if Great Sedan demanded a scouring of the land, then Vadrian would lead the cleansing. But first Vadrian had to prove his worth even more, prove himself by building a legend in Sunja's pit. The battles he fought on the arena sands would draw a following to him. They'd find him because of his name and the coin it brought. Then they would find him because of his fighting ability, then his deeds in the pit, and finally his words. His success in the arena was first step toward a church that would rule the world in Sedan's name, with Vadrian as the warrior prophet. The fire knew other gladiators talked about him. He sensed their fear. That thought stopped him. The one called Harm, the brazen one who had openly challenged him, Vadrian would make him an example of Sedan's order in the coming world. A world where there would be no mercy for the non-believers and the barbarians of faraway lands. Vadrian wondered if Harm wasn't a test of his resolve. If so, the Jiberian bastard would be quickly killed and offered. It would be glorious. Vadrian would make a name for himself with Harm's death. Make a name first, and the rest would follow. Sedan would see to it. Sedan would see to everything. And behold! There in his path, a man waved for Vadrian's attention, interrupting his thoughts. A little man, looking and smelling like a vagrant. Vadrian scowled until he decided to be merciful, at least until he heard what the man had to say. "Salutations, Vadrian the Fire," the little man said in a formal voice. He bowed before Vadrian's towering visage, and that pleased the holy fighter. Then Vadrian's eyes narrowed. He wondered if the worm was an agent sent by Sedan.
"My name is Bazange," the man said.
He wore only a plain tunic and black pants, but he possessed a youthful face. Vadrian paused. The man-boy interested him.
"I wish to walk with you for a bit, if I may, and speak as well,"
Bazange said.
"As you wish."
Vadrian resumed walking, but very much aware of Bazange at his side. "Walk with me, but when I tell you to leave me, you shall do so." The little man nodded. He kept up with the taller warrior, sidestepping others who darted into his path to avoid Vadrian.
My master has watched you twice now upon the arena sands, and he's most impressed.
I don't care about your master, Vadrian snapped, as his master was the Sedan above.
That's why I've been sent to you,
Bazam said as he continued to dodge passers-by while the masses parted for the hulking fighter, like fresh bread cleaved with a knife. Those who did not were shoved out of the way. My master is the owner of the most honorable and prestigious gladiator school in Sunja. As I've said, he's impressed with your performance as of late, but he believes that under his teachings, you might very well achieve greatness.
Vadrian pushed aside a young boy barely 10.
I will claim greatness on my own, the gladiator replied gruffly.
An older, portly man cut in front of the gladiator. The fire grabbed him by the neck and heaved him into a stall of hanging smoked meats. Then he walked on, ignoring the resulting stares. Bazange glanced back at the scene.
Well, with my master's support, I have no need of your master.
You have need of coin, do you not?
Vadrian didn't reply, his suspicions rising.
My master is willing to take you into his house and train you.
I need no further training.
But with our instruction, you will truly rise in the rankings.
I am rising now,
but only so far.
Bazange persisted with a smile. You won't advance much farther without a proper school. Right now, you are only fighting the free trained, and all know what their metal is. Once you rise above that rabble, as you clearly will, you will need the experience, teaching, and support of a professional school, else the lesser gladiator houses will chew you up.
I need no one.
You don't seem to understand, Bazange pressed,
leaning in close to Vadrian.
You are alone right now. If you've caught the eye of my master, you've caught the others' attention as well. And if you turn away all suitors, they won't allow you to compete in the later rounds. Not without a school behind you.
Sedan is behind me.
Sedan?
A skeptical Bazange spat.
If trained and bled gladiators find you in the streets, even those from the lowest of ranked houses, they will punish you for being a mongrel playing at a game meant for lions. You must realize that the established schools don't tolerate free-trained warriors, that you're looked upon as untrained.